women nowadays are strictly a bitch. Why is it so why do they always act like shit? It's amazing how they can't be respectful to the good guys. They just wanna play around and hurt them with their lies. Yeah, bitch, I've been through it so many times, and it hurts when I tried, but my feelings keep getting fried. Your only excuse is I'm too much of a nice guy. Then you go around and get cheated on down the line. You come back crying saying, when will I get mine? You whine like a bitch cause you didn't choose the right guy. Well fucking hell, bitch, I'm standing right here. It's just a shame that your vision ain't clear. All you wanna do is act like a slut. I'll tell you what, get fucked. Don't come back next year, disease knocking at my door, begging please.
She be strictly a bitch. They be strictly a bitch. Why be strictly a bitch?
Bitch, what the fuck is up?
Strictly a bitch. She be strictly a bitch. They be strictly a bitch. Why be strictly a bitch?
What the fuck's going on?
You try to act like daddy's little girl and act like there's nothing going on. But what happens when the night comes along? Got these random guys trying to get you thong. It fucks me off when they hit the legal age. You once a nice guy, your friendship fades away into nothing and we never see it coming. Why you front, bitch? Don't be stunned something. All they want is the money and the power. If you don't have that, it only goes sour. It leads to depression. In your mind you can't stop the affection selfishly leading you on, acting like nothing is wrong. What the fuck's going on? You're here and you're there, you say that you care, but really did you think that's fair?
She be strictly a bitch. They be strictly a bitch. Why be strictly a bitch?
Bitch, what the fuck is up?
Strictly a bitch. She be strictly a bitch. They be strictly a bitch. Why be
what the fuck's going on?
Do they think life's a game? Do they take life seriously? Cause every time I see them, they don't take me seriously. You think men treat you all disrespectfully, but we have a high mentality of maturity to secure and keep a good friendship or leave them in tragedy. In their case, when they hit 18, it becomes ugly and nasty. Different crowds, slight routes, pants down, doing things with your mouth. And their only excuse is
we're young.
See them throwing up the YOLO.
Having fun.
Yeah, who cares what you do then later on? For a pregnant, blame the kid cause he did it wrong. It's amazing when you be a nice guy and they roll their eyes. Bitch, need a slap, no, what?
She be strictly a bitch. They be strictly a bitch. Why be strictly a bitch?
Bitch, what the fuck is up?
Strictly a bitch. She be strictly a bitch. They be strictly a bitch. Why be strictly a bitch?
What the fuck's going on?
Fucking bitch.
Hi, I'm Randy. I'll be your official host for all the fun, festivities, and frivolity that this podcast can provide. The round mound of podcast sound, pound for pound, the best podcast around. You're probably wondering where that song came from that started the program. That's from Muggsy, up-and-coming hip-hop artist from the land down under, Australia, M-U-G-Z-Y. And you can check out more of his music on Facebook at official Muggsy under band profile. And that song spoke to me, so I use that as the intro. And hopefully later in the program, we'll be talking to Muggsy about his music and hip-hop culture. And that should be interesting to find out his musical roots. But first, we have this item up for bids on The Podcast is Right. This lady is wondering, is it possible to get drunk on $1 Applebee's Long Island iced teas? I didn't think I'd actually get lit off the $1 Long Island iced tea. But she was wrong. Unironically, love chain restaurants. I've always loved them, but my affection grew significantly when I hit legal drinking age. Living in New York City, she goes, it's not unusual to shell out upwards of $18 for a cocktail at a fancy bar. Happy hours exist, but many end right when I leave work, or as early as 5 p.m., which is just cruel. Not at chain restaurants, though. It's seemingly always happy hour at Bubba Gump's or Olive Garden or Texas Roadhouse. We have a Texas Roadhouse here in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which is a good restaurant with cartoonish-sized goblets of alcohol going for $7 or $8. The cocktails tend to have silly names like Pink Punk Martini, a real drink at TGA Fridays, or the Presidente Margarita, a classic at Chili's. At these establishments, no one, at least none of the employees, judges me for ordering an appetizer sampler for myself or pounding back a skinny lime margarita, a bubblegum daiquiri, and a mudslide for dessert. At Change, you can come as you are and leave when you've had your money's worth of stale mozzarella sticks and the finest bottom shelf liquor. No chain restaurant has leaned into pleasing customers like myself more than Applebee's. Last October, the venerable chain announced a $1 margarita, Dollarita special for Neighborhood Appreciation Month. At first, it appeared to be a one-off, but almost every month since, Applebee's has graced its restaurants with drink specials such as the Dollarama, a $1 Mama Mama, a $2 Absolute Vodka Lemonades, $2 Dos Equis. Well, then you'd become the most interesting man in the world, I guess, after you drink the Dos Equis. And in my opinion, the ultimate $1 Long Island iced tea. Shouldn't it be just called Lit? Oh, boy. I know, they are pretty, that's just a whole combination of a lot of things, Long Island iced teas. I remember those days. First announced as December drink of the month, Applebee's bought it back in June to kick off summer. The Dollar Lit features five spirits, vodka, rum, gin, tequila, and triple sec, mixed with sweet and sour mix, topped with a splash of cola, and served in a 10-ounce mug over ice. The press release boasts. You may have seen Applebee's promoting this drink with cutesy tongue-in-cheek. I hope tweets like, a $1 Long Island iced tea, the perfect drink for that friend who always forgets their wallet. You may be wondering how it's possible to make money like this. Are the bartenders putting the alcohol in with a dropper? Or are they using cheap vodka banned in most countries over fears it will make you go blind? I had only tried one of the Applebee's specials before, the Dollarita, and it tasted like straight-up margarita mix containing no actual tequila. I was convinced it was impossible for the Dollar Long Island tea to actually get you lit, and I needed to investigate. To perform this investigation, I went to a Brooklyn Applebee's after work on a Wednesday night. My colleague Peter came along, presumably to take photos, but really to make sure I didn't do anything in an inebriated state that would get us all sued. As a serious journalist, I took notes the whole time. Once seated, I promptly ordered both Peter and me LITs on Applebee's electronic menu, an iPad-like device that allows you to order alcohol and play games like slots and solitaire, except you can actually win anything. You can't actually win anything. When the waitress, whose name I regrettably forgot, arrived to check our IDs, I could tell that we certainly weren't the first to order the LIT during her shift, and that she couldn't wait until her shift, June, and her time employed at Applebee's to be over. Peter spotted two of his friends who naturally were drinking LITs. The LIT arrived in what looked like a stein made for babies. The drink was a green-brown color that looked like sewage. Well, there's a nice way to put it. Oh, yeah, my drink looks like sewage. I sipped and was immediately flooded with doubts about the alcohol content. It tasted like watered-down Coke and triggered memories of the time a bartender didn't card me at Disney World and then served me what was definitely a virgin piña colada. Regular Long Island iced teas taste like, oh, shit, because they contain only alcohol and you can only order one when you want to get plastered via a single drink. These facts made the apparent lack in booze in our beverages all the more irritating and forced us to ponder what was exactly being put in these things. Nevertheless, I finished my first drink in minutes. Peter took considerably longer. As the ice melted, I wondered if the second drink, made infamous on The Office, is an actual phenomenon. When the waitress came over, I barely had to say anything. She already knew I wanted another. By this time, we had to order food to maintain the facade of respectability. Necessary to order several more LITs. Peter and I both ordered cheeseburgers and fries. Looking around at the other patrons, many, but not all, had the same baby steins in front of them. Well, the second one didn't taste any more alcoholic than the first, despite vigorous stirring. In my notes, I wrote, I felt like I could drink 20. The next note reads, am I drunk? I kind of feel like I'm drunk. The burgers arrived and were objectively terrible. The buns were maybe key food brand, and I was actually kind of glad that chefs seemed to have no knowledge of what medium rare means. While the food was truly disgusting, I appreciated it nonetheless, because miraculously I was beginning to feel something which made me grateful to no longer have an empty stomach. Before ordering my third LIT, the waitress informed me that there is a 3-per-customer limit, and she was floored. I hadn't noticed any mention of a limit in the ads for the promotion. I immediately cooked up a conspiracy theory that the waitress hated me and didn't want me to enjoy all the LITs God intended. That said, according to the Applebee's spokesman, all Applebee's restaurants are locally owned and operated, and drink limits may vary by location and state laws. In all of our restaurants, we encourage responsible service of alcohol. Our franchises implementing their own respectable service of alcohol practices, which includes monitoring consumption and exercising judgment with regards to drink limits. Okay, fine. Peter kindly donated his drink to me, which was fine for our experiment, but we couldn't work in a real-life scenario. He then suggested a better workaround. We could simply go to another Applebee's, conveniently located just a 10-minute walk away on the same street. We agreed to leave after my third. Yeah, and hopefully they got their wish and got lit. But yeah, I remember being lit on those at one time or another in my dissipated youth. Yeah, they don't look like the most appetizing drink. Oh, I did have a vodka drink here a while back. It was in a small town restaurant that I've never had a bad meal at, actually. It was a Blue Hawaiian. It had vodka and I can't think of the other things that it had in it, but it was a pretty drink and it tasted pretty good as well. And also last night I went to a burger feed at a little joint in a little town here in southwest Minnesota. And it was the first time for me to have a beer called Nordeast, made by Grain Belt. And if you like a medium dark beer that's not too light and not too bitter, this is the drink for you. It's really good. I had 3 of them. I think I'll go with that for a while. Also, you know, if you like Blue Moon, it's not a stretch for you to like Nordeast. So you might try that in the next John out for alcoholic beverages.
Randy, I think it's time to move on to another topic, you stud muffin.
With the advent of reality television like Big Brother, Survivor, Bachelor, Bachelorette, Real Housewives of whatever city, everyone thinks they want to be a reality TV star, sometimes with bad consequences. As everything becomes a reality TV show, we forget that reality shows are actually staged, and we think that daily life is a reality show, when it's not. Social media mishaps have been in the news lately. Well, a lot lately. On July 3rd, the Plain Bay saga erupted on Twitter, was celebrated briefly, then quickly condemned as an invasion of privacy. The same day, a trio of adventure YouTubers tragically died when they were swept in over a waterfall in British Columbia. On July 6th, an Instagrammer known for posting daredevil shots of his feet dangling off cliffs and skyscrapers fell to his death from a New York City building. And just this week, news broke that an influencer was bit by a shark in the Bahamas in pursuit of the perfect picture. The Deluge is a tragic mix of poor judgment, risky behavior, and terrible luck. But the thing they all have in common is that these people were doing it for the gram. I don't know exactly. Well, doing it for the fame of social media. It begs the question, are we becoming so thirsty for content that we're willing to ignore our better judgment just to get likes? To get some perspective on how the human psyche factors into all this, Vice asked some experts to weigh in. Irana Raiku is the director of the Internet Ethics Program at Santa Clara University Marcella Center for Applied Ethics. Aaron Vogel, Ph.D., is a postdoctoral fellow in the Department of Psychiatry at the University of California, San Francisco, researching social media. Here's their take. Question and answers from separate interviews has been edited and combined here for clarity and brevity. And what's your professional reaction to the Plain Bay saga? I haven't heard of this, so this will be my first introduction to this saga. Aaron Vogel. I think we're living in a weird age in terms of privacy and what we can expect from strangers. We're used to the possibility of being in the background of other people's photos, you know, things that happen naturally when you're out in public. But with social media, we don't really know when other people are using our lives for entertainment. This idea of live tweeting or recording other people for Instagram or Snapchat stories is something that just sort of happens now. And I think social norms are still being formed around what's okay and what's not. It's really anxiety-provoking for people when they think about it. Irana Raiku, the reason the backlash to Plain Bay was so negative is because norms were violated here. The idea that nobody cares about privacy seems to be debunked by this story. The golden rule, the idea of do unto others, is one reason people responded the way they did. They would not want that done to them. I wonder whether the woman who did the live tweeting thought about that and really considered those people as individuals who have the same rights and needs as she does. Would she have been comfortable if somebody did that to her? The response shows that most of us would probably not be. Do you think the endless pursuit of content compromises our values? Vogel. Yeah, I think in some ways it does, especially now that more and more people are becoming influencers and YouTubers. The bar is that much higher and the competition is that much greater. And people have to do increasingly drastic and interesting things if they want to stay relevant. Like that catfish coolie eating those extremely hot peppers. It's really disgusting when he ate that chocolate bootla pepper. In the Plain Bay situation, it treated people as a means to an end, which ethicists have long said is not an ethical thing to do. Whatever the intent was, even if the intent was just entertainment, if it was something that was supposed to help those people. Here's a secondary issue of her capitalizing on this, but even if she hadn't, even if it was just something she tweeted to her friends and it didn't go as viral as it did, maybe stayed to 300 Twitter followers and not hundreds of thousands, this still feels like a problem. What makes us abandon our better judgment? Well, in the context of Plain Bay, I think it's one thing to overhear a conversation. No one expects you to plug your ears, but no one expects you to start publicizing it without the people involved realizing that you're doing it. I wonder whether there's been a rapid lack of sensitivity that we are starting to see other people as content rather than individual human beings with rights and needs. As everything becomes a reality show, we forget that reality shows are actually staged, and we think that daily life is a reality show when it's not. Most people choose not to participate in reality shows and don't want to be forced to be the stars of one. That's kind of how it feels in a story like this. Social media is really quick and easy to get reinforcement, to get positive reactions or even negative attention for those things we post. and that can be really tempting for a lot of people. They end up using social media very frequently or worrying a lot about what they're posting or how many followers they have because they get used to having that sort of attention. More than ever, people who would not otherwise have the opportunity to be famous or have a large following have a chance to do that. And they get really rewarded if they're successful at it. Instagram influencers and YouTubers can make a ton of money just by narrating what they're doing in their everyday life. That's something that we really haven't seen before, where ordinary people can get famous for doing ordinary things. Well, I do this, and I'm not famous. It would be nice to make a little money at this, though. What does an ethical presence on social media look like? I would not presume to know, Aku says. I think that's a good question, and I think my virtue ethicist friends would say that Aristotle talked about practical wisdom. There aren't any hard rules that you can follow all the time. It depends on the circumstances and the context. Social media has been used in conflicts to distribute video about human rights violations. So in many situations, the importance of getting information out might outweigh privacy concerns. One tool we have at the center is called the Framework for Ethical Decision Making. It asks people to look at a potential decision through 5 different ethical lenses: right, fairness, and justice, and the common good, which means benefits versus harm, and virtue ethics. Most of us believe we have the right to privacy. I think that's one thing people are responding to. In terms of fairness, I think this feels unfair. The fact that there are parties that don't know that this is happening while someone behind them is recording and publishing their conversations, it goes back to issues of consent online. We want companies and governments to ask for our consent because that relates to our autonomy as human beings. In terms of the common good, that's defined as conditions under which society can function well. You know, the conversations that we have sometimes when we travel, a discussion may last the length of a flight, then you never see that person again. Sometimes that can be really in-depth and meaningful, with people opening up to each other, then separating. Sometimes you remember them for the rest of your life, and there's something valuable there, right? If we all start to worry about anything we say that might be recorded and posted and laughed at or admired or whatever, it's going to reduce those kinds of interactions, I think. It's going to make people leery, and that's the drawback in terms of the common good. Through a variety of lenses, the Plain Bay decision feels wrong. The framework suggests that there are problems from a variety of ethical perspectives. We make ethical decisions all the time, and we're not going to use a framework every time. But if people aren't sure what the right thing to do is, then putting the decision through these ethical evaluations will at least make sure you don't do anything that you just adamantly regret later. I realize that it's unrealistic to do that kind of analysis all the time, but my colleagues who are virtue ethicists would argue that ethics is like a muscle that you develop, like athletes who develop muscle memory, and over time you will make better decisions. Thinking about that article and those people that hurt themselves or died, I was interested in fact-checking this Tide Pod thing, whether that was actually, it is actually a real thing, and how stupid can people be, but I guess now, well, I've seen the commercials for child safety caps on Tide Pods. Yes, people really are putting laundry detergent in their mouths and posting videos online. The challenge usually involves a teenager biting into a Tide laundry detergent pod while being recorded on video or streamed live. And in January 2018, millions of cable TV viewers had their first encounter with the Tide Pod Challenge, an online and social media phenomenon which someone with a camera, usually a teenager, films themselves biting into one of the laundry detergent pods. A government watchdog is expressing concern over the dangerous misuse of a laundry detergent. CBS News reported on January 12th. In this latest social media fad, teenagers are putting detergent pods in their mouth and what's being called the Tide Pod Challenge. I can't believe I have to say this right now, said Good Morning America. Diane Macedo, they are brightly colored and they are nicely wrapped, but these Tide Pods are not candy or pizza toppings or breakfast cereal. They are not edible. And you'll be sent to the hospital or even worse, possibly, depending on how much you've ingested. We received several inquiries from readers wanting to know whether people really are putting laundry detergents in their mouth on camera. And they are. Amid a wave of news coverage in January 2018, safety watchdogs, in response to media inquiries, warned of these dangers associated with biting Tide Pods. Now, for a teenager, how stupid can you be? And as a couple with like a newborn child or something, I would keep those things far away out of reach of children and have them in the child safety cap container. But I do know some of them come in a little baggy, which may present a problem. A spokesman for the American Association of Poison Control Center told us that in the first 11 days of 2018, there had been 40 reported exposures to liquid laundry detergent pods by 13 to 19-year-olds. That figure represents 20% of the total number of similar incidents in all of 2017. Furthermore, half of the incidents so far this year have been deemed deliberate, as opposed to around a quarter in 2017. The spokesman added, even Tide itself had to intervene with a plea to not eat their detergent. Yeah, in this age, when we thought we'd have the flying car and transporters and going to Mars, we have to warn people about not eating laundry detergent. Seems stupid. Very stupid. Google, which owns YouTube and Facebook, both announced on January 18 that they're deleting Tide Pod Challenge videos from their platforms because they encourage dangerous activities. We haven't been able to pinpoint the exact origins of the Tide Pod Challenge as a viral social media phenomenon, nor the allure of eating Tide Pods as a meme. Online pranksters and daredevils have been messing with laundry detergent for years. We don't want to encourage any dangerous activity, but some relevant keyword searches on YouTube and Facebook will yield videos back to 2011, which show people ingesting detergent of various kinds. Boy, that's just plain idiotic there. I don't know what to say about that. But stop doing things stupid for getting famous on the net. Well, some people might call this stupid, but at least I'm not eating laundry detergent. In 2012, the Procter & Gamble owned Tide introduced Tide Pods, brightly colored plastic pods that contain liquid laundry detergent, following reports that young children had been mistaken them for candy and putting them in their mouths. The company added a safety latch to the pod containers. The rising popularity of Tide Pods brought more online stupidity with the bursting texture of the pods and apparent focus of attention for daredevils. We found videos on YouTube and Facebook from as far back as 2012 and 2013 that involved squeezing the pods until they burst. The earliest instance that we found the Tide Pod Challenge as a concept involved eating the pods was in September 2012, and we found a YouTube video dating to June 2014, which showed a prankster biting into one. Oh, and the story goes on and on, but there's just a little bit more left here. Since 2014, every video hosting social network has been replete with clip after clip of teenagers biting into Tide Pods, only discovered that what they had been told, don't eat Tide Pods, really was sage advice. 2015 article on the satirical website The Onion an op-ed by a young boy vowing to eat a detergent pod as soon as his parents dropped their guard, reintroduced the concept into what you might call the internet's collective unconscious. It's also possible that some pranksters were inspired to use this name Tide Pod Challenge on their pod-eating videos as a subversion of the Tide Pod Challenge series, an online video marketing campaign that Tide itself, perhaps unaware of the other virtual phenomenon of the same, launched in 2015. A viral 2017 video by the College Humor website captured the somewhat perverse allure that biting into Tide Pods hold for some people. It is accurately described the possible consequences, showing a young man being rushed to the hospital afterwards. The concept of eating Tide Pods, the bizarre temptation to eat them, warnings not to eat them, and the serious physical damage done by eating them all spread more intensively as an online meme and cultural touchstones in the later months of 2017, as New Yorker magazine documented. Worryingly, the actual practice of biting into Tide Pods appears to have intensified as well, prompting the wave of warnings and news coverage in January 2018. Now, if you have to warn people about that now in 2018, what does it say about society? Everyone's trying to get famous and make a lot of money on the internet, and they'll do it in a lot of stupid ways.
Well, Randy, I think it's time to call Black Alert and Spore Drive this episode to the interwebs.
Thank you, Zira. I would like to thank everyone who listened to my 75th episode of Infotainment. And you can contact me at Randy Podcaster on Twitter and RandyMS12 at gmail.com. You can listen at YouTube, typing Randy Infotainment in the search. And also Podbean, Podomatic, Blueberry, and InfotainmentPodcast.com. Once again, thank you, everybody. And we will talk to you on the next podcast. Bye-bye, folks. As a postscript, you can also listen to me on Stitcher now by typing Infotainment. My icon is the microphone with the rainbow colors behind it. And I forgot to mention that. But once again, we will catch you on a later podcast. Bye-bye.